Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For close to 50 years, photographer Terrence Moore has been taking images of Route 66. In fact, one of his first major photojournalism assignments was a series of the End of Route 66 articles in the late 70s. Yet the road still survives, and Terrence Moore has continued to photograph the sights and views along it. Moore is considered to be one of America's premier landscape and architectural photographers of the American Southwest. His images have appeared in the New York Times, Rolling Stone magazine, Arizona Highways, Smithsonian, and American Heritage. His books include Under the Sun, Baja, and Desert Southwest, and his latest is titled 66 on 66, A Photographer's Journey, a compendium of images going back 50 years along Route 66, depicting the neon, the architecture, and varied landscapes along the road. The book features text by Michael Wallace, and the two collaborated on Route 66, the Mother Road, back in 1990. And they'll both be talking about the book and signing it this Friday evening at 7 o'clock at Magic City Books. Terrence Moore joins me by phone today here on Studio Tulsa. Terrence Moore, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here.
Back in the 1970s, you teamed up with a writer and did a series of articles on the end of Route 66. And now here, 40 years later, you're publishing another book of photos, many spanning that 40 years since, of the old route. Are you surprised by that? I mean, that sounds sort of interesting that you sort of declared the death at the sort of the beginning of your career. And now at this point, you're still putting out photographs about the road.
Yeah, it really did surprise me, and I think it surprised 99% of the people that had an affinity for the road. You know, as you mentioned, I did a number of stories on the end of the road, ranging from 1976 until 1984, and then when it was officially decommissioned, this amazing revival happened. And none of us, I don't think any of us could have predicted that. We thought, of course, 66, because it's such an icon, would continue in people's minds and continue in certain spots or areas. But we never dreamed that it would be reborn. And that's the exciting part. And that makes us happy that the road will probably continue to live on for years and years.
Tell me about how you first started getting interested in photographing the road. It sounds like this is something you've done from some of your earliest professional work, and maybe even prior to that.
Yeah, I did a few. You know, the thing is, unfortunately, I never really photographed certain things that were in my neighborhood that actually influenced me and in what I did later in my life. My family moved from northern Minnesota to Southern California right on Foothill Boulevard, which was Route 66. And at that time, everything north of, there was some growth south of Foothill at that point. And north of Foothill, it was all citrus groves all the way to the San Gabriel Mountains. And, you know, it was an absolutely beautiful place to live and to grow up at that point as a young boy. But something that influenced me greatly, and I think this inspired me to do photography of the road, you know, years later, was the fact that all through my childhood, right through my high school years, we watched all the groves being torn down. I can still hear the bulldozers pushing the trees over and then lighting them on fire. And the next thing we knew, there was a new strip mall or a new subdivision. And it really, really bothered me. But I, you know, it was kind of out of my control. But then when I moved to New Mexico after I got out of college, I lived right off of 66, or right off of Central. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Albuquerque had just been bypassed the year before. And I thought, you know, I've got to get out there and take some photos. And that was kind of doing the 66 stuff part-time and doing many other things at the same time. That's what inspired me. Or not just inspired me. I had officially declared myself as a photographer at that point. And then coincidentally, that's when Michael Wallace and I met. And we were kind of two peas out of the same pod, you know, me coming from Southern California and him coming from St. Louis.
Now, as you were mentioning, just talking about watching the effects of Route 66 being bypassed, can you maybe put that into words? Because Central Avenue is still this amazing road through Albuquerque, which was Route 66. And I remember as a small kid driving down Central Avenue when I-40 wasn't built. And it was, right. You know, it was just a feast for the eye. I think there's this incredible photograph by Ernest Haas that's almost become iconic of Albuquerque, which just showed this cascade of neon and ceramic signs as far as the eye could see down Central Avenue. And I would imagine that changed so quickly once I-40 was built.
Well, it did change overnight, but it took a while for a lot of those businesses to kind of fade away. And even today, a few of them remain, fortunately. It was kind of a long haul, but I remember I was over there. It's been within the last 10 years, probably the last 8 years. I was amazed at how many things were lost, let's say, between 2000 and 2006 or 7 in Albuquerque. And fortunately, in Albuquerque, as well as a lot of other towns and cities along the road, I mean, other things are being restored. For instance, the Elvado Motel in Albuquerque is back up and operating. And that was one of our favorite haunts, you know, way back when. And, you know, it's just poor Albuquerque. Then they decided they were going to put in these electric buses and spent millions of dollars and tore up Central Avenue for a couple of years, and now the buses aren't working, and they've taken them out of commission. They don't seem to be doing anything right there, I'm afraid. I mean, a few things are good, but you know what I mean. It just doesn't seem to be well coordinated.
Well, you point up an interesting point, which is that even when we thought that there was this revival of Route 66, the things that sort of made Route 66 unique were still being lost. And one of the things, this is something your book points out, very interesting for anybody who's traveled the road. A lot of the things that are in this book, which are, again, is over 40 years of photographs, are gone.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what I kind of set out to do with my book, I wanted to show places that most people had never seen or maybe caught a glimpse of and then they disappeared. So I would say over 50% of the photographs in the book represent things that are no longer there. On the other hand, I didn't want to make it just nostalgia. I wanted people to go out today and see some of the very landmarks that are represented in the book. And so I did a kind of a combination of things, for lack of a better term, somewhat of a then and now. And then even some of the photographs I took years and years ago, you could go out and stand in exactly the same place today and take the same photograph. So I didn't want it to just be nostalgia. I wanted to kind of fill in some of the gaps from the early days, and I didn't want to be cluttered with new nouveau, you know, a la pop stand, you know, that kind of thing, which I'm not knocking it, because all that's important to the road and to its continual life. But at the same time, you know, it's the new 66. You know, and I was trying to represent the other side of the coin.
Yeah. This is the interesting thing about this route, is it continues to evolve. How do you feel about that evolution?
Well, for the most part, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, there's a lot of schlock and a lot of phony baloney, you know, which bothers me a little bit. But then there's some wonderful things, like here in Arizona, the Hackberry store is thriving, and it's been in business since the 30s. The La Posada, the old Harvey House in Winslow, is up and running. I was up there a few weeks ago on a Saturday night in December, and it was booked solid. It's become an attraction, and it's a very wonderful thing. And then all up and down the road, I mean, what Tulsa's doing, for instance, is absolutely phenomenal. And so that brings life back into the road that is really, really positive. You know, especially when they can reconstruct or restore some of the older buildings and neon, whatever it may be.
Neon plays a big role in this book. There's an awful lot of neon that you document, many of it over 40 years, some of it lost. You know, I look at one of the images from Tulsa in there, and that neon's gone. Or it's somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it's not on Route 66 anymore.
The Will Rogers Court.
Yeah, that's gone.
Well, fortunately, that's one of the signs that's slated to be rebuilt for Tulsa, which is a really wonderful thing because that was one of the nicest signs along the whole route, I believe.
What was the attraction of neon for you? Was that just sort of a symbol of that era? You know, the 40s through the 60s, that was the neon era.
Yeah, I always liked it. And I started photographing it, I guess, in the early 70s. And it's kind of a passion in a way, although there are a lot of people that have a lot more neon than I do. But again, I started shooting it pretty early on. And not just on 66, but on a lot of other roads in the West. You know, I'm really infatuated by it. And, you know, the sad part is, two of my favorite signs, one was lost about 10 years ago, was the Navajo Motel in Holbrook, Arizona. It stayed up for years and years and years. And then one day I was driving down the road there and boom, it was gone. And that's a sign that should have never been taken down. And then there was my favorite sign in Albuquerque was the old Simon's Hat store on Central. And Simon's Hats was there for at least 40 years, and then they sold out, and it became a bar and grill called the Rio Bravo Cafe. This was in the late 80s, as I recall. And the cool thing they did, it was a really big sign, and it was a real icon of downtown Albuquerque. They took where it said Simon's, and they just redid that portion to say Rio Bravo Cafe, and then it's got a neon cowboy with a lariat and some cactus around him. You know, it was an absolutely gorgeous sign. Well, that sign disappeared, and it should have never left. But, you know, it's the point of all of this is even though it's on top of it, a lot of us try to be and try to save things, you know, these things are still disappearing right under our eyes that shouldn't be. So but hopefully with this new designation of a National Historic Trail, that might pump a little more money and interest into the road and keep these things from happening.
My guest today is Terrence Moore. He's a photographer whose work has appeared in American Heritage Magazine, the Smithsonian, New York Times, and Arizona Highways. And his latest book, written with Michael Wallace, is 66 on 66, A Photographer's Journey, which documents his documenting of the Route 66 over 40 years of taking photographs along the road, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Now, you mentioned the National Trail designation. That did not get the National Historic Trail designation. It didn't pass the Senate and wasn't signed. It'll have to be reintroduced this year. What would be the impact along Route 66 in your mind?
Well, I'm not as up to date on all the details, but in general terms, I know some of the money that's been allocated through the National Historic
Trails,
highway,
uh-huh,
designation, that some of that money is drying up. And with the current administration, chances are that won't be restored for some time. So getting the National Historic Trail designation will help fill in the gap there a little bit. And I do think it's inevitable that'll happen. I think everybody wants it. You know, and I don't think your political party necessarily is going to define that. I think people are really working together. That's the big thing, and that's really important, and I think it will happen.
Well, earlier we were talking about some of the incredible signage you see along Route 66, and especially the western part of the trail. And I was really struck by some of the earliest images in the book, which go back to probably that 1976 series of the End of the Route series of articles. And those are inevitably lost because they were almost lost when you photographed them in 1976. I'm thinking of some of the signs that you know, said water, you know, a couple hundred miles down the road, or just some of the fading things that probably were put up in the 40s or maybe even earlier.
Right. We were kind of right on the edge of it. I mean, I do have a little bit of regret, only in the sense that I wish, as much as I loved it, I wish I'd given it a little more time in those early days. I was real involved with lots of other projects at the same time, and I just kind of played around with it. I didn't, you know, other than doing those few articles were very specific, you know, like Tucum Carry Tonight or Ghost Road of the Hokies, where we actually went out and interviewed people from Oklahoma who had actually made the trip. that was a really fascinating project. But, you know, at the same time, I was neglecting a lot of the road that was still really wonderful. So in retrospect, I wish, you know, Terry, I wish you'd been able to do a lot more. But I guess that's life, isn't it?
It is. Several of the images actually focus on some of your own journeys on Route 66. I'm looking at a picture of the blue Cadu, this big, long-finned Cadillac at the Cadillac Ranch in 1984.
Right. That was a car. My writer friend, Ivor Peterson, and I got an assignment. This was, again, the end of Route 66 article I worked on. We got an assignment from Rolling Stone to roll down the road and kind of document it. And without going into a lot of detail, I said to Ivor, who worked for the New York Times and lived in New Jersey at the time, I said, well, you know, we could meet in Chicago, but what are we going to do, rent an Avis car and drive down the highway like that? It just didn't seem right, you know. And he and I thought a lot alike. And he said, well, I've got a friend in Detroit who has a 59 Cadillac, and maybe he'd sell it to us. So, you know, my ears perked up, and we ended up buying that car for $750 a piece. and we rolled it. You know, I pumped up the tires and put some new wiper blades on it and changed the oil and filled up the radiator, and we drove it to L.A. And the nice thing was, is in that era, that was where the original location of the Cadillac Ranch was, you were able to drive right up to the sculpture. And so that was kind of fun, you know, because when they moved it, then they put up a big fence, you know, so you can't get close to it anymore. I mean, by car.
Right.
So yeah. It was kind of a special moment.
And then there's another, it looks like another trip where you're in an old Woody driving across the road.
Yeah, that's my, I've had a couple of old, lots of old cars, but that was one of my favorite cars. And that car did a lot of 66. It went from Oklahoma City all the way to Santa Monica on a couple different trips. But that was a lot of fun. And that was done relatively recently. That was done, you know, between 2001 and 2006 in that car. And the thing about it is I've driven a lot of old cars on certain sections of the road, and it really kind of puts you in the right place in your head, in the way, you know, you're probably driving with the windows rolled down and you're probably got some Colorado Kool-Aid in the back seat. And, you know, you're kind of dealing with the elements, you know, the way people did for years and years and years. And to me, that was always part of the, you know, the excitement of doing those road stories and just being on the road. And the project I'm kind of looking forward to that I hope I can pull together is drive an all-electric car down the road to make it a little more contemporary.
Yeah, no, that would be really interesting. One of the things I noticed about the images you chose for the book, most of them are from, I mean, I'll be generous and say Tulsa West, but maybe even, I would say, perhaps even Amarillo West. Was that intentional, or just the images you chose were from the western part of the road?
Well, it's a little bit of a combination of both. My friend Clark Warswick, who did the afterword, actually laid out 90% of the book, and he did it on his own. And I gave him a couple hundred images, and he whittled it down to 66. And I changed maybe three of them, and if I had my druthers, I'd change maybe two more. But that was all I did. I sort of went with his take, and I didn't even realize that I didn't have one image in there from Illinois or Kansas or, you know, eastern Oklahoma, you know, with the exception of Tulsa. So, and it kind of bothers me still, but then I said, well, you know, 99% of the people I do books on 66, they literally go from Chicago to Los Angeles. And so from the other point of view, I said, well, my fascination with the road, even though I'm from northern Minnesota, my fascination with the road really, in a way, began in central Oklahoma. Because as you drive, let's say, from Tulsa to Oklahoma City and then from Oklahoma City west, I mean, the sky opens up and, you know, you're really in the west then. And to me, that was kind of what I wanted to convey, is just my personal take on the road, which didn't include the entire road necessarily, even though I love the entire road. I was focusing more on the area that I knew well or that I had a lot of personal experience with. And I've been up and down between California, Arizona, New Mexico, and western Oklahoma. I've been up and down that road God knows how many times, hundreds of times. And so I just focused on that, and I didn't worry about it being in chronological order or any of that.
No. You know, it's interesting, earlier you said, I wish I'd taken more care with the images, but I tell you, one of the most striking images in the whole collection is perhaps one of the earliest photographs you took along the road, and it was from 1970, and it's a New Mexico landscape that has a Kodak film, which sort of is very anachronistic in itself, a Kodak film sign, just two words on a little small sign, says Kodak film, and yet you've captured that quintessential New Mexico image of the big sky with the puffy blue white clouds. It's just an amazing photograph.
Yeah, thank you. I love that photo too, and I have a quick story to tell you, which is really brings this full circle. When you consider here we are in 2019, and that was 1970, so we're essentially talking 50 years, really. There's a couple of things going on in that photo. One is Kodak, which was 70% of my book was shot on Kodachrome.
Right.
The other thing is the mountain range in the background, called the San Mateo Mountains, in the center, the tallest peak, which is Mount Taylor, is the Navajo sacred mountain of the South, and it is the sacred mountain for Acoma Pueblo. And I think it may be for Laguna Pueblo as well, but I'm certain it is for Acoma. And so that is a really sacred spot. And the interesting thing, I was over there in Cubero just less than 2 months ago, and I knew the family that owned what used to be the Via de Cubero Cafe and what used to be the Cubero Motel, what still is the Cubero Trading Post. I knew the same. I knew the family's name was Gottlieb, and I communicated with them years ago, but I never met any of the family. And the interesting thing was, when I was there just 6-7 weeks ago, I saw this man kind of walking around in front, and I went up and said hello to him, and we started chatting, and then we introduced ourselves, and he said his name was Kevin Gottlieb, and I went, oh, this is your family's place. And he goes, yeah, my brother and I own this. And then we inherited from our parents, and who inherited from grandparents, who came directly from Germany, moved to Cubero, and set up that trading post. And it's still in the same family. And there I was talking to the real thing 50 years later.
Wow.
And all those years had gone by, and I'd never met them.
That's interesting.
I just need to say is that's the magic of the road, that there are people out there that still have that kind of connection with it.
What I love in a lot of the photographs is the fact that you actually capture the road itself. I'm looking at an image from 1984 in western Oklahoma. It's got one of the famous Tucumcari Tonight billboards along this utterly flat piece of road, but you actually I think the focus of the photograph is actually the road itself, which still looked in good condition in 84.
Yeah, I've never been back to that exact spot, but it's not far west of the Pony Bridge where mm-hmm. they have the original. Now, I may be wrong because I'm not the super roadie. Like Jim Ross might be quivering, you know, at me saying this, but that pavement by the Pony Bridge, which is concrete, was laid down in 1932. And I'm pretty sure that that section that you're looking at with that photograph of the Tucumcari Tonight billboard was at the same era. And it's really close. You know, I can't remember how many miles down the road it was, but, you know, it was within 20, 30 miles for sure, maybe 10. So that isn't just the Tucumcari Tonight thing and, you know, be sure you don't fall asleep because you're never going to make a Albuquerque thing, but that actual roadbed is one of the original concrete sections that was laid down in Oklahoma in the 30s.
Yeah, it's an amazing, it's a wonderful photograph. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the importance of preservation. What would preservation, getting National Historic Landmark status for the road, how would that help the road today in your mind?
Well, it'll draw attention internationally, even more attention, which always funnels more people and more money and helps businesses maintain. You know, that's been one of the biggest problems with particularly a lot of the smaller towns, but even the cities where everybody just hangs out along the interstate and the rest of the town dries up. And you know, it's hard as much as people are dedicated to restoring the buildings and keeping the businesses alive. Unless they have enough business, they just can't maintain. And so all this increased interest in the road, or you know, the historic designation, et cetera, it'll just bring people in. It'll help everybody all along the road and keep the spirit of the road alive. And I guess that's the most important thing. And then, you know, I mean, it's always going to be a super important landmark for all of us as Americans, but it's certainly the international appeal of the highway and what it represents is actually growing in popularity. So, you know, it's a great thing all the way around.
All right. The name of the book is 66 on 66, the work of Terrence Moore over 40 years of his photographing sites and views of the Route 66. That's a beautiful book. Terrence, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy to be in Tulsa soon.
Photographer Terrence Moore speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His latest book is titled 66 on 66, A Photographer's Journey, featuring 66 images taken over 50 years on Route 66, co-authored with text by Michael Wallace. They'll both be signing the book this Friday evening at 7 o'clock at Magic City Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Rigsby at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.